everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Game Grooves Uncovered podcast. I'm your host, Ro Poneganti. It's been a pretty exciting month for video games and video game music, and I just can't stop thinking of more things to talk about, so I had to remember that we have this podcast. And our guest today is none other than Audio Mocha. I've known Audio Mocha's music for at least 6-7 years.
I think it's 6 years at this point. I joined Pixel Mixers in 20, actually, maybe a little less, because I joined Pixel Mixers in 2018 on the Discord.
Yeah, there you go. So I've seen your work in Pixel Mixers, of course. I think mastered some of the albums, and I've seen the name pop up from then. And of course, you've worked on Pixel Mixers, OCR, even Dwelling of Duels, now Game Grooves, and of course, your own work. You've been branded with surf punk, surf rock, and similar styles. You've got a lot of great releases, but also you've been playing live. So I can't wait to talk about that. And of course, all of that brings you to today, where I want to talk about your new album, Seas of Destiny, which of course is music from the wonderful series Xenoblade Chronicles, as well as just being part of the Game Grooves album challenge. So thank you for coming on.
Oh, pleasure's all mine, bro.
Yeah, it's been a long time coming for sure, because not only have I known your work and I've gotten to, you know, cross paths so many times, but in many ways, I feel like you represent a very, like, I don't know, too many people who are doing anything kind of close to, surf rock and surf punk in the community. And I really want to kind of like dive into that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, fire away.
So I guess to start, and I always love to kind of like over define things on the podcast for folks who are new. So what exactly is, let's start better. What style of music would you kind of call what you do here? And what kind of is it?
Oh, that's been a really tough question, especially lately, because I used to just call it surf rock, but I don't know when the definition of surf rock ends, because there's a lot of surf adjacent genres out there that I've dipped my feet into. I mean,
sure.
So lately I've just been calling it tropical rock or Latin rock, because I mean, basically I'm still using like kind of this, like the quintessential surf tone, which is just,
sure,
you know, Stratocaster into a Fender amplifier, a little bit overdriven on my end. But then, I mean, especially lately, I've been adding a lot of Latin elements, Latin percussion,
yeah,
trumpets, the random things that I've been seeing in surf rock, but not what people think of when they typically think of surf rock, because, you know, normally when people think of surf rock, they might think of like something from The Ventures, where it's like, oh, it's 12-bar blues, clean guitar, just hit a tremolo a whole bunch of times.
Right.
But yeah, like in my end, like I use a lot of Latin elements. I also take inspiration from like using drumming styles like soca, which is like a Caribbean drumming style, which
to put it more
generalized, it's like I tell people, I describe it as like what do you call it, the reggaeton beat, which is typically called the habanera,
but
in a faster way. And then another genre that I use for inspiration is called sukus, which is like a Congolese guitar style that if you listen to the guitar, it sounds incredibly similar. And I was led to that actually by like a past coworker, and
wow.
Yeah, it's a whole lot of tropical influence, because all of these countries are like everywhere that I tend to pull from, they tend to have that in common,
right?
You know, in tropical regions.
No, it's very interesting, because you know, you said it yourself, like when people hear surf rock, and I've experienced it when chatting with you too, of course, is like we do think of the only very mainstream types of music, of course, like Ventures, Beach Boys, and the California, you know, classic sort of sound. But clearly there's more to it. And when I listen to your music, I don't I don't hear just an emulation of that. And especially when it comes to like listening to this album, you know, as you mentioned, there's a lot of Latin rock influence, a lot of different instruments, which is really interesting. Did you get started with any of that when you started learning guitar, or was that something that got introduced to you later?
Oh, no, you come like absolutely, absolutely different. So I got into guitar the way that everyone gets into guitar. Mm-hmm. I wanted to play metal.
Nice.
I'm still a huge metalhead. Like, so when I first started playing, my first influences, I would say like the heaviest one on my plane was actually a Jimmy Page's plane.
Okay.
Because I used to play a lot of Led Zeppelin on guitar. That's what I started with.
Right, right.
And I mean, eventually I moved on to Metallica, but that's pretty similar because I mean Kirk Hammett is heavy on using pentatonic licks. So
right, right.
That's like I would say that those were the huge influences that I started with. I started getting into surf rock sometime around college. So the big reason for that was actually I was listening to Joe Satriani.
And then
one of his tracks, which I found out was actually a cover, is Sleepwalk.
Yeah.
I found that it's a cover by
Santos.
So that one is originally by two guys called Santos and Johnny.
That's right.
And I remember I listened to that track and I thought, I guess randomly, I just stumbled onto genre. I thought, man, I gotta find more of this surf rock like this. And I don't know why I thought surf rock, because I had never heard of the genre being described as that before. I just always associated with, you know, with surf culture. So then that led me to just like typing in surf rock and Pandora, and that's what got me started. Because then I got introduced to other bands like, well, obviously Dick Dale, he's the biggest influence in surf rock. But then the band that really got me into it was Daikaiju, which is a modern like a modern surf punk kind of band that is based on Japanese monster movie music.
Right, right.
And Kaiju. once I started hearing their stuff, I just thought this is great. I'm gonna start playing some more of this. I've been to Daikaiju shows. I don't know how many times at this point. I mean,
wow.
The lead player knows me at this point. It's always funny hearing their story, because it's like you never think that a band that's out of Alabama with an Indian frontman would be doing Japanese monster movie music. But it's just a mishmash of like a whole bunch of world. Different cultures, basically.
Right, right. That's interesting. That, and again, it kind of circles back to the Latin rock influence as well, which, you know, it's something that I brought up with speaking to Fabian, with you know, speaking to a lot of different people who are kind of trying to put their either heritage or, you know, their interest in like their culture into video game music or just like their music in general, which is really exciting. One of the things I have to ask, of course, is, you know, you're a guitar player, you play LED guitars and all, but listening to especially Seas of Destiny, but a lot of your stuff uses other instruments. So what other instruments do you reach for when making music like this? And how did that kind of come about? Because surf rock in my mind is, you know, the guitars, and then I know drums, bass, organ sometimes.
So basically the way that the instruments that I tend to reach for mostly are going to be, yeah, you already said guitar, drum, and bass, but then the organ is another huge one that I like to use. That was one of the big ones that I got into that was two reasons. One, back when I was first starting in Pixel Mixers, I ran into this video about this free VST of like this particular organ that I heard it, and I thought, dude, this sounds awesome. I want to put it into everything. That's how that happened.
Right.
And then another thing that happened is that I got an organ pedal. I remember that Sixto Sounds was talking about like weird pedals that he wanted to try out, and he showed this organ pedal, and then I heard one of the settings. I was just going through a demo of this pedal, and I thought, this sounds pretty cool. And then the demo ended with a surf rock song. And I remember hearing the organ in there, and I was thinking, it's like, I know this tune, and I'm trying to remember the name. The name escapes me now, but
it'll come to you right as we hang up, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm thinking of the melody right now, but it's just kind of like the name is escaping me, but I'll keep thinking about it. So there's the organ. Another instrument that I've been using a lot, or I've at least been trying to, is the slide guitar.
Yeah, I really liked that.
So that one, everyone always thinks SpongeBob music for that one. That's how I always describe it, because it's like, it's my favorite way of like showing it off. It's a great instrument, I just got my guitar that I converted into that. So that one's a super fun one that I like to include. Try to include trumpet, but I'm pretty bad at the trumpet. So sometimes I'm able to kind of fake my way through a track. Other times I'll just like reach for someone and be like, hey man, can you play this for me?
Sure. No, I'm also very bad at trumpet, but I have one. I can play the one or two scales, but it sounded great on the record. Like no one would know otherwise.
One of the tracks with trumpet, the most prominent one, didn't include me. That was my boy Shulk, which is a Gower playing cover.
Right, right.
That one included my trumpet teacher because I looked at the range and I thought, I can't do this. I can't do it that fast. I'm going to ask him about this. And yeah, I included him on the track.
No, it's very nice to like kind of draw where you're comfortable with. And then when you want, you know, someone who's, you know, more experienced on it. You brought up SpongeBob music, which of course I imagine has some commonalities. Do you know the scene from the show Ed, Edd n Eddy where Double D plays Hawaiian slide kind of? I don't know if it was exactly Hawaiian slide guitar, but
I know exactly the one you mean. I don't remember the episode. It's been super long, but yeah. I remember the scene because as a kid, I always thought like, what's going on there? But so I don't know what episode it was from.
Yeah,
it's or what Double D was playing, but I like the images in my like.
It's called 88 Fingers Edward. Like, if you look it up on YouTube, you'll hear it, and like that slide sound is definitely common with it. It has like all sorts of really cool tricks to it. But you know, when we talked about like mainstream things, where surf rock or anything close, you know, is popularized, I always think to that, and I think to SpongeBob, of course. Now that said, I feel like when we've talked about surf rock, like again, there's a lot of sort of generalization about it. But do you find it hard to work on, like as a music style, to produce and play, you know, compared to any stuff you do where it's kind of less in that style?
Oh, so let's see. Production-wise, I just feel like I suck at production everywhere. So I just feel like maybe I'm slightly more comfortable in it now than other genres. But there are, let's see. There are some things that are easier about it and some things that are harder. What's easier about it, particularly for me, is that since in surf rock, you tend to use a lighter guitar tone. It means I'm able to use fancier chords. Because if you try to do that kind of thing with a very distorted tone, you just get a lot of very, very hard, like, way too much harmonic information. In surf, I can be playing a single notes kind of stuff and then pop into doing chords whenever I want. So that's one of the easier things about it. One of the harder things about it is that some of the ways that I learned to play the guitar, I had to change up when I started doing surf, because some of the tricks that we do for, say, more overdriven genres, like in metal, is that since we have the distortion that helps us keep a lot of sustain,
right?
It makes bends be a very like bends sound very good in metal, or you know, with a very overdriven amp. In surf, that it doesn't quite work out that way. Sometimes, like I still bend a lot, but if I really want to draw attention to a note, I've learned that it's much better to just like pull it off as a full chord or as a double stop.
Right.
Because trying to bend into it, it's kind of like when you bend on an acoustic guitar. I mean, it's a little better than an acoustic guitar where you just kind of hear like a wimpy kind of bend and then it just dies immediately. But right. You still don't have that. You don't have that massive amount of help from, you know, the distortion with it. The other challenge that I found with surf is that because the lead guitar tends to be very clean and I still tend to use rhythm guitars.
Sure, sure.
Balancing the tones out can be very, very challenging because I can easily drown out the lead guitar. And that's what led me to experiment for a while with just having one rhythm guitar and my lead guitar, each pants very slightly, kind of in a way that some of the old Yngwie Malmsteen records were.
Oh, sure, sure. But it's old school.
Right. And I mean, in that way, I would be able to have a slightly crunchy rhythm guitar. I guess I shouldn't say crunchy, but one that has a little bit of sparkle to it that sure. wouldn't drown out the lead. So that's one of the balancing challenges that I found with surf.
That's interesting. And you know, like my knowledge of surf has pretty much been thanks to you. So, you know, when I tried making Misery Lou for a little Pulp Fiction skit, and I wanted it to sound close, and you know. There, I'd listened to a lot of like different references for how to do it, and there's only one or two guitar players in the band, and back then you could only record so many tracks. So you know, it's definitely interesting in 2023 to see you also play off those limitations, or kind of like the simplicity of it all. Yet it still sounds full. One thing that I got to learn, of course, from the panel we got to do at VGMCon is how you transform different video game songs in your mind that work with, you know, the style that you like to write in. Is there any sort of games that you feel do or don't quite call to you to turn into a surf rock style? Or do you kind of like to avoid things that are already close to it? You know, like water themes or, you know, if there's ever been like surf music in a video game already.
I wouldn't say I try to avoid it. But so I would say like I try to some other tracks might call to me to do it more before that one. So that one brings up an interesting track. Super Mario Odyssey, Steam Gardens.
Yeah.
I absolutely love that song, but I've never covered it. I've been wanting to, but it's just one of those tracks where it's like, since it's already so close to my style, I mean, it pretty much already is.
Right, right.
That set in the same style. That I don't feel like if I were to transform it, I wouldn't want to do it into straight up surf. I would want to do it with more like more Latinized because it itself is already pretty
right.
It's already very much up my style and I already really dig it that way. So like, I mean that's one particular track, but like say water theme. That wouldn't keep me away. I would definitely sure. one of the tracks that I actually there's multiple tracks of that are water themed that I love to jam with. I just haven't released commercially, like Zora's Domain, the ocean theme from Wind Waker, water themes or similar stuff that usually doesn't keep me away. If a track is melodic enough, I'll find it fun. Like I'll think maybe I'll do that one in surf. And yeah, I mean, that's pretty much, I guess that part of the process.
No, that's a really cool way. And of course, if the panel is recorded anywhere, then I think you spoke to it pretty well for your section. And it was really cool to hear that. So in addition to, of course, arranging for yourself, I always liked watching how many different solo performances you've gotten to do at VGM Together, for example, Bonus Stage, Mag West, as well as shows with Pandora's Bread. What makes it kind of exciting or special when you get to play live? And, you know, is there any like aspects of your music that you get to, you know, work to make it sound good live or be fun for you to play live?
So I guess it would depend on the venue, funny enough. Because like if I'm traveling somewhere, it means I usually have a light rig. So typically for the past few gigs, it's just been me and my laptop, you know, doing my tone for me. And what's fun for me in those cases is just being able to jam out with other people, especially if I have an audience that really gets into it.
Sure.
Which is why one of the reasons that I've been wanting to play a Saturday show at MagWest at the pool party, because mm-hmm. I know the pool party is always the pool stuff is described as like one of the smaller stages, but honestly, like the vibe there, the vibe there last year was just like when it was just absolutely amazing on Saturday. So that's the kind of thing that I look forward to.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
And especially like one of the things I try to do to get the audience engaged, I've got my beach ball and I've tried having my bubble guns, but the bubble guns, they don't, I mean, you can either buy bubble stuff that is very expensive and like stage quality, or you can buy this, the ones that are on Amazon for a few bucks and there's nothing in between. And those are the ones I tend to buy because they're the small ones that fit in my backpack to a flying gig. And they've never quite worked out just yet. Oh. So those are the things that I look forward to, like for sets that I have to fly to. I mean, especially being able to do stuff like improvise stuff live. But since I'm alone and typically playing the backing tracks, I'm still kind of limited by that.
Sure.
But then say I'm doing a gig live here, where I'm able to use all of my gear.
Right, right.
Sometimes I get a little bit too excited because sometimes I'll be the guy going to an open mic with my Princeton amp and like my electric guitar and my full like multi-effects processor.
Oh, sure.
But it's just like I never get to use that amp or all that gear anywhere. So it's just like I'm gonna take this. This is gonna be fun. I'm gonna get to use like actual spring reverb and my hear it from an actual amp. So those are the things that I really look forward to over here.
Now, I like that the tone gets to be, I mean, from the videos, it always sounds nice, but I know what you mean when it comes to performing with like the gear you want and the environment you want. Not only that, but you have like kind of a signature expectation from me now that you'll have an LED Blaze guitar and GoPro. How did the LED guitar get made?
So that one, I'm trying to think of the very first stage because I'm trying to remember where the idea first came through. I know I wanted something wild. Actually, I think I just wanted lights overall. I believe I started looking into this stuff when it was time to go to my first VGM Together performance I was going to do that. I was going to do that one with a friend of mine who used to live here. And we are both incredibly extra when it comes to our shows here. And at one point, I remember. So this actually goes back way further back. Back in college, or even before then, back in college, I had heard about EL Wire.
Okay.
And I made myself an EL Wire graduation hat, which had a Wi-Fi symbol on it flashing. Fast forward a few years, and I thought, man, let me try using EL Wire on my guitar. That was a mistake because the thing about EL Wire is that since it uses an alternating current, that induces it induces a noise that you can hear very, very clearly because you got pickups picking up all that noise right there.
Wow,
so I dropped that idea. That was the first iteration. Afterwards, I started looking online to see what other LED things existed. And then I found that there were LED light strips with diffusers that made it look like a neon. So I started buying those. And my first light strip was pretty good, but that was only 1 meter, so it only covered part of the guitar. It's still really good. I have it around here somewhere. Ever since then, I've just been thinking like, how do I make this fit better on the guitar? Because before I would just use an ungodly amount of tape. You wouldn't see it much from the audience. Because I would try to use blue tape or like clear tape, but if you got close, you notice that it looked incredibly, incredibly poor. Like it just looked pretty terrible up close. But the lights were able to convince people that it was not so bad. which is what led me to the current iteration where I just have double-sided Velcro, some like double-sided Velcro strips around the guitar in some points so that I'm able to take off the light strip whenever I want and put it on other guitars. So yeah, that's pretty much how it came about, just from a dumb idea back from college for my graduation that eventually I thought, let me try doing this with my guitar.
No, I like that it almost sounds like an improvised idea, but it's become something that instantly just makes your performance stand out. And I remember during VGM Together, I had no idea you were doing that when it came time for your show. And I was like, what is going on? but it looked great. You played really great and adapted your music really well for live. So with that, of course, I've held off talking about the album, and we definitely need to. So Seas of Destiny, Xenoblade Tropical Tribute. So obviously this was kind of part of an interesting event, but how did you look about, you know, like how did you look at getting started with the album and getting started with the album challenge as well?
So what happened was that for a while I'd been wanting to do a Xenoblade album, but it's always kind of a challenge to, you know, to motivate myself to undertake such a big project. I mean, because I love Xenoblade music, and I'm not going to lie, Xenoblade music does very well on Spotify. So I just thought, I love this music. I want to do an album with it eventually because I've done one track and I want to do more.
Right.
So then when Alan announced the album challenge, at that point I had done a few Xenoblade tracks, but they were kind of from my early time in VGM when I was even worse at production. So I thought, all right, this album challenge sounds like a great reason for me to finally get working on the album because I can make new tracks and then re-record these old tracks and remake them and then just have a big package. And that's how that ended up getting started. It was pretty much just like Alan's challenge just gave me the reason to finally do what I've wanted to do for a long time.
Right, like the extra push.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, it's really cool to see that, you know, not just yourself, but quite a lot of people use that push and they end up doing something that's daunting. And you bring up like production a lot, of course, but was there anything you feel like you learned because you got to make this album that you weren't, you know, maybe doing before, or just things that you kind of feel better at now?
So the album brought me back into doing double track rhythm guitars. That's one of the things that I learned to do a little bit more, because I started learning just how to give enough gain to the lead guitar and how to push off the other guitars enough that they will be somewhat in balance. Like I still don't feel like I'm not super sold on that process, but it's going a lot better than it is now. Well, than it was before. Another thing I learned that was super interesting is that if you listen to some of the tracks, I don't know if it comes across on every speaker, but I used my bass guitar as both a bass duty, but also as a baritone to kind of do, to go a little bit gentier.
Yeah. So it fills in some out of the heavier really tracks.
Yes. Yeah, so in some of the tracks towards the end, one of the things that I started trying out was running that bass guitar through my guitar's effect chain, and that ended up working out really well. And I learned how to use that in order to get a very crunchy baritone kind of baritone twang. So I got to learn that came out pretty well in my opinion. That's one of the elements that I was pretty happy with. Yeah, I think that. Off the top of my head, those are the things that I can say I learned. I learned specifically from the album on the album challenge.
No, it turned out like very interesting because I'd heard how you've been, you know, making songs. I even got to hear a few of the work in progresses for this album. So I can definitely validate that it sounds great and it definitely sounds different too. One of the other things about Xenoblade, of course, and a lot of tracks, it's orchestra music and symphonic elements. Did you find it hard to convert that style to surf without, you know, sacrificing all of the little, you know, orchestrations? Or was it easy just because, you know, you know the music so well anyway, and you're used to covering music this way?
I would say the orchestration didn't pose much of a challenge, because that's one of the ways that laziness kind of tends to help, because sure. I listen to the melody and I think, all right, let me play that melody, let me syncopate it, and then I think I'm gonna put some chords to this. So some of the for a bunch of the tracks, the chords are not the exact, like, are not exactly what's on the regular tracks. And I mean, the other thing that really helps about Xenoblade's music is that, yeah, it's very orchestrated, but it's also incredibly melodic. And one thing that I found is that if something has a very well-defined melody, I can work with it. And
if it has reiterate, a very well-defined melody with a lot of motion.
Okay.
And
with a lot of motion, I mean, like, is it like if it's a track that depends on a lot of whole notes being held, I tend to steer away from those, because those, it tends to be less fun to work with. And also, since I have the limitation of not having that much sustain to work with, I tend to avoid turning those into surf music.
It's definitely interesting that you say that, because like when I think of Xenoblade Chronicles and a lot of the music, like of the music I know, most of them, as you say, they have like pretty, you know, hummable kind of melodies, and it's easy to think of the rhythm, but a lot of them do have, you know, symphonic slowed down kind of motion to it. So it definitely explains how you chose a lot of the tracks that you did. You have like a lot of upbeat songs too, from like Mobius Battle. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. You'll know our names, of course. Zanza the Divine, like Colony 9 is also Gar playing. They're very happy. Is there like an aspect of Xenoblade Chronicles that you wanted to capture, like a theme, or were you kind of just trying to pull your favorite songs from each game and just, you know, have at it?
I was just trying to, yeah, just pull my favorite songs, and sometimes pull songs that you wouldn't expect. So one of the tracks, I actually didn't care much about the original one for this one. Machina Forest. Sure. Forest of the Napon. If you listen to the original, it's actually very much like the type of track that I say that I would avoid, that it uses a lot of very held out notes. So I think most of the notes there, they all tend to be very half, like just half note after half note after half note after half note. And I picked the song because I thought, you know what? No one does this. I don't see this on the Xenoblade playlist, like the biggest one that I've seen online. I want to take a chance with that song. And at first I was kind of avoiding that song because I thought, man, why did I choose that one? And then it just sort of clicked. I just thought this would sound very great if I, instead of like holding the notes out, I add some syncopation. Where I just like split the note out into multiple notes, and then to turn it into something more Latin, with a more Latin feel.
Yeah, it's actually one of the things about this album that I think I liked the most, is when I went to listen, I wasn't 100% sure what I would expect. You know, because I was like, all right, we'll get like surf punk and, you know, but there's a lot of different styles that you were able to put into different songs, you know, from three different kind of Xenoblade games. So it's almost like you made the perfect playlist for someone who's into Xenoblade and likes your music style. Now, how did the song names get chosen? Because we have things like It's Mobin Time and My Boy Shulk. And a few in Spanish, like Los Nopon Trópicos, La Colonia Novena. Like, did that come at the very end, or did you know you were going to do that?
Yeah, most of the song names, I honestly just chose them last minute, because I submitted, well, basically, towards like at the end of the challenge, like once everything was all done, I submitted the songs to Dwelling of Duels as an alt, alts. And when I was submitting, I thought, man, I'm going to need titles for these. So I just thought, okay, let me see Colony 9. All right, Colonia Novena, because it literally just means ninth colony.
Right.
For Forest of the Napan one, I just thought, okay, I got to mention the Napan and I got to mention it's tropical. Yeah, sure. Let me do it. The tropical Napan. There we go. But then, I mean, other song titles were definitely kind of planned. So for Mobin Time.
Yeah.
around the time that Xenoblade 3 came out, the movie Morbius had just come out. And we all remember all the memes of like, oh, it's Morbin time, and then he morbed all over them. People were making those memes for Xenoblade 3 because the main bad guys are called Mobius. Right. So everyone online would be like, oh, it's Mobin time, it's Mobin time. There would be
oh yeah,
like animations of one of the Mobius enemies like doing a breakdance while it says it's Mobin time. So I just thought I can only name this track one thing. And yeah, so there's that one. But then there's another track, which it's more like, it's kind of like an inside joke between my wife and I. It's that dates back all the way back to 2014. My Boy Shulk. That one was around the time when Super Smash Brothers for 3DS and Wii U was being announced.
Right.
And all the fighters were being announced and such. And I mean, I'm a huge Smash Brothers fan. I will watch every single trailer for every new character and every Nintendo Direct. Mm. So then comes the day that Shulk got revealed. That was absolutely huge. So like after that, like the hype was so real that I would just be walking around home humming My Boy Shulk is coming to Super Smash Brothers in the same melody as Gower Plain. And I didn't do that for super long, but then it got stuck in my wife's head. She would just be like, My Boy Shulk, Shulk is in Super Smash Brothers. It got stuck in her head. So then comes years later, and yeah, you know, This is after the album challenge. All the main album challenge tracks were done, and well, around at the end of January, I ended up getting laid off from my job. So I thought, you know what? Now that I have this extra time, I can add one last track to the album challenge. Album, and I thought, let me do Gower Plain. And then I thought about it. I was like, this can only have one title. This has to be My Boy Shulk. It's all because of a dumb inside joke.
No, I like that so much. and I'm surprised it wasn't on the album to begin with, because Gower Plain is so popular. Like, I've heard of it.
That's one of those tracks where it seemed very daunting. I couldn't think of a way how to make it sound surf. Mm. So for years, I would think, like, how do I play this? How do I play this? It was only around February of this year that I thought, wait, this track would sound absolutely perfect if I made it more Latin. And it's a very straight cover, but I just like, I changed the instrumentation to more match a Latin feel kind of song. And that's why it ended up being a last minute track. It was just, it's not that I didn't like the song. I just never knew how to handle it. It was it just felt like an impossible beast.
You know, in general, like, you tackle a lot of songs that I would also put in that category, like You Will Know Our Names, of course. And I think one of the best parts, as you said, in the challenge is that it kind of pushed you to do something that you weren't sure you might get around to doing. So it's still really cool that you managed to get this many tracks from the series all together into like a very firm album. And if I'm not mistaken, it's one of your first themed albums for one game. Well, it's still a game franchise, at least. Did you already set your eyes on like another franchise that you could see doing the sort of surf punk Latin rock style to?
One that I've had in my mind for also a very long time, though it's not a specific game in the series, but Final Fantasy.
Ooh.
There's a ton of music in there that I want to do. And I also have a few tracks from the past that I haven't gotten to do, that I want to re-record because I did them very early. But I want next video game themed album that I want to do I want to make a Final Fantasy album. I've already got a bunch of track ideas. I mean, one of the things that like I was making a shit post on Twitter earlier this year is that, oh, let me make a salsa or a Latin version of a One Winged Angel.
Oh, that would be cool.
Yeah, so I got to figure that one out before the end of the year because I just put it as a shit post and I just said, oh, one like and I'll make this. And then I just liked it because I thought, yeah, I can, I'll do this. This sounds fun. But Final Fantasy is definitely what I got my eyes set on next. I don't know when I'm going to do that one because for the next few months, one of the things that I'm going to be, that I'm working on more is I'm going to focus more on like working on original covers, original stuff as well, and then more I guess like more pop covers, because something that I've been trying to do is I've been trying to get more real life gigs.
Sure. But
for video game music, that tends to be kind of limited, but one of the things that has been really popular for like the open mics and the few gigs that I've done around town is turning stuff into Latin surfy kind of stuff. So I've been doing that a bit more lately. And once I got a bit more of a repertoire of that, as well as working out some of the original stuff that I've got that I've had sitting in my looper for a while, that's when I'll start hopping into my Final Fantasy ideas, because I've been waiting to do Shadow's theme from Final Fantasy VI for like an ungodly amount of time. I think that one's been sitting on the back burner for about 10 years.
Yeah, you absolutely have to get on that if you've been sitting on it that long. Now, would the album be called Final Fantasy, like SEA? Or is that...
Oh my... I actually hadn't thought of that.
Oh no! Yeah. It's because you did Seas of Destiny, so it was on my mind.
Oh,
but there's your option.
I hadn't thought of that because... I mean, the reason I chose Seas of Destiny as the title was mainly of a pun based on the line that Dumban says, "Seize your destiny."
Ah, there you go.
Xenoblade a ton. But I hadn't thought of Final Fantasy.
Oh my gosh. That's, I don't know if you're going to be able to do this for other games, so you might as well.
Oh my. This just reminds me of that meme of that meme of what's it called, of Bohemian Rhapsody, where it's just the sea made of Fanta, and there's just a stick figure saying like, "Oh, is this a fantasy?"
Oh my god, it's great. Well, if it works, it works, and people are gonna remember it.
I think that one is gonna need a logo that looks like the Fanta logo.
Oh, I like that a lot. Now, of course, you said Final Fantasy, but is there any game series that you think would just be like super bizarre or, you know, like too weird for surf rock, or is everything kind of up for grabs, you think? Like Doom, rock. Like, would that just be too weird?
Doom would be fun. Doom would be so much fun.
I think I would Rip and Tear would be a decent one. It's already an A and stuff. And
see, like I said before, as long as it has a movable melody, or if it's something that I can kind of like do in the same way that Miserlou was, where I can just hang out on a lower string and then just like hit a tremolo, it will work. And Doom would definitely be one of those, because I like, you know, what is it, EM1 M1, that's a fun one for me to play with my surf tone.
Oh, that'd be really cool.
I mean, I would love to do Doom. So that one would definitely work. There's a lot of movement in that. I mean, it's really tough to think, because a lot of old school series will work well because they tend to have very, very mobile melodies. But I guess I can't think of any specific series, because I mean, I would just say like, oh, there's a lot of games nowadays that they tend to be more ambient or more... Yeah, like where the music's more ambient or just kind of doesn't exist, then that in those cases it wouldn't quite work. But other than that, most everything is up for grabs.
I like that attitude, especially because, you know, you can join any sort of themed album or community event and you're in so many of these, let alone your own stuff. It sounds like there's plenty more surf to work on. Now, before closing, I wanted to see if you can kind of lightning round, along with your own music, what kind of bands would you say people should check out, or artists, if they're interested in getting into surf punk or even Latin rock? I know you mentioned a few.
Okay, so easy, Daikaiju. That one is my easily my my favorite surf for surf punk kind of stuff. So aside from Daikaiju, there's King Ghidorah. That one we have to, it will be kind of tough to search up on Google because it's spelled without the H at the end. And even then, Google will just bring you images of King Ghidorah from Godzilla. There's, let's see, 130 Grit. He is, I'm sad that he's not around much anymore and that he closed his Patreon. His surf music is like absolutely amazing. I love his Latin stuff too. Like a lot of my inspiration comes from him. My guitar tone, a lot of it comes from him because he was the reason that I finally pulled myself out of, hey, let me use the bridge pickup for everything. Because in his videos, I started noticing, hey, his tone sounds kind of, I really dig his tone, but how's he getting that? And then I noticed that his pickup, he was using the neck. So that's what got... Wow. There was that. So those are three big ones. Another surf punk act that I really love is Amphibian Man. So that's another one man band. He's from Ukraine. Dude's like an absolute monster. And from his albums, I mean, I love all of his stuff, but the ones that I recommend from him are Shapes B. Shapes B is like his biggest one, and No Surfers in My Town. I would say that those are like the big ones for like people looking to get into Latin rock and surf rock. Mostly surf punk. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like if people want to go for more, like for even more Latin kind of stuff, that's in the same kind of vein, which would be along the cumbia vein, that would be Afro Sound. So Afro Sound is, I mean, their music is heard a lot, particularly in Christmas in Colombia. And it's just, they got a lot of what my sound consists of, which is like very twangy guitar and sometimes kind of weird instrumentation, but used in a very Latin way. So I would heavily recommend their stuff. So
very cool.
Those are the bands I would recommend for that.
All right. Well, I think everyone should take note because this has been a really cool conversation to learn about not just like video games, but especially like all the music that inspires like how you write and how you arrange, and a pretty unique sound for VGM, I think. And you did mention 130 Grant Andrew, who used to be back in the day part of the Game Lark label. So I do remember getting to listen to a lot of his stuff, and it was extremely inspirational for just seeing how far someone can go with that style.
I just wish he was still active.
I see stuff come out of the YouTube page, but I haven't heard from him actually. So yeah, it would be great.
Yeah.
Now
hopefully he just continues. He continues music. He's definitely one of the hidden gems of VGM.
Oh, I would definitely agree. And I think every time someone has brought him up, which is actually more often than you'd think, we always look at like how good the videos are, the production, and, like really clever styles. I always think of his version of Aquatic Ruin Zone from Sonic Hedgehog 2, I think. I'm actually not too familiar with Sonic 2 and 3, but I think it was off of one of those, and it was a really, really good Latin rock sort of song with that, you know, surf rock tone going on. But we're nearing our time, so where can folks get Seas of Destiny now?
So the Seas of Destiny is available on all streaming platforms as well as on my Bandcamp. So yeah, whichever is your platform of choice, and it should be available there.
And is there anything you can share for performing live or anything upcoming that you can share with us?
Yeah, so well, these are kind of specific because these are more local events, but in about 2 weeks I'll be performing at Chipper's Lanes in Broomfield. that one's going to be a pretty small gig in a bowling alley. But then in October 14 at noon, I'll be performing at VinCon, which is a vintage game convention that's happening here in Colorado. So if anyone's in the Colorado area and wants to hit that up, you can find me and Pandora's Bread. We'll be performing on stage from 12 to 12:45 then.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, and I always love Pandora's as well. Sounds like there's plenty of Audio Mocha coming up in the future. So everyone, please check out the album. It's a ton of fun. It's a great production, and it's also just a very diverse listen. And if you're in the area, definitely check those out. And of course, I hopefully will see you on virtual shows and or in person really soon, hopefully. Are you going to MAGFest?
I definitely want to. I don't want to miss it, and I'm gonna do my best to attend. And I mean, sure. I should be able to. It's just that it's always tricky, you know, getting the hotel, getting the flight.
Oh yeah.
But I mean, even today, like I just thought, you know what? Let me, like, just in case I don't perform there, I'm gonna go ahead and like sign up for the MAGFest Community Orchestra and see what that's like.
Very cool.
Yeah, I just want to be able to perform there once, and even if I'm all the way in the back, I want to go to MAGFest. It's just always like the most diciest of all the conventions because it's like in the most awkward time of the year.
Sure. But yeah, right after Christmas break and, you know, vacations for people and all.
Exactly. But the thing that made me really happy is that it's happening 2 weeks later this time. So this, I would say, actually, I mean, I would say that I'm going to go out on a limb and say I will be there unless something really bad happens.
Sure. Well, I really hope nothing bad happens, and I definitely am looking forward to seeing you there. And I also definitely want to see you perform there in some capacity. So I'm looking forward for all of that. But thank you so much for chatting with me about, you know, your new album and about this really, really fun, very broad style of music that you're able to do. All right. And until next time, everybody, this has been the Game Nerds Uncovered podcast. And I'll see you next time. Bye.
All right. Thank you so much.